We have 2 hours and 20 minutes to complete our topic. And something that would probably be a good entry point is a little bit of review. Just take a look at this drawing right here. Going down that, someone was using the word tips. It's not exactly tips. It's
chanting,
like a anatomy of chanting with taste or progressing in the process of chanting gradually, step by step. So from chanting and hearing with a specific intent, sankalpa, when the mind wanders, bring the mind back. That's a good practice. Remember that one tomorrow. When the mind wanders, bring the mind back. When it's continuing to wander and you continue to bring it back, rather than get frustrated, continue to be patient. And whatever the topics are that the mind wants to go to, detachment from those topics. We spent time with neglecting the mind. That chart of the soul approaching the holy name, but the mind wanting to continue to be in charge, the master, the authority that we listen to, how to address that, neglect the mind. And as you continue to try going down that path, the realization is, I can't do this alone. I need mercy. I need Krishna's mercy. And so that awakens humility and the need. The word that was put on the board is mercy, but stronger. Need for Krishna's mercy. Then we can have this intense focus, spelled with one S. Intense and focused shelter in the holy name. So there's an exercise or a meditation that goes along with this, taking strong shelter. But I think first what we'll do is have a little kirtan. And guess what? You all now have the words to the song, right? Has that been passed out? Not yet? Okay. Are they coming around? Is that, what do we have here? Is that the one? Okay, fantastic. Okay, so our ensemble here is going to take it away. You want them to sing along? Okay.
So, we've been talking about taking shelter, and here's a wonderful song. It's a traditional Bengali song. It's a wonderful song where we're imploring the mercy of the holy name and Krishna. I'll read the translation first. There's a refrain, Pranam Tamai Ganasham. It's all obeisances unto you, O Ganasham. Taking refuge at your lotus feet, I fearlessly implore you this time, O Hari, give me your mercy. I shall cross the ocean of sorrow by the boat of your holy name. O Lord, we're always asleep while you're ever awake. Every moment, we can only make errors, our eyes being covered by illusion. Please remove this covering, my Lord, so I may behold your form as the divine couple with Sri Radha by your side. I will gaze at you until my hankering eyes are pacified, thus fulfilling my soul's desire.
Shanik shanik gata jibu choke mohe avaran.
Anybody know where our marking pens went? Okay. We're going to do a little preparation for the next of the Shikshastakam verses. We're going to cover two more texts, 4 and 5. But according to that little list of 9 items, we're at... Yeah, thank you. We finished at 6, neglecting the mind. So rather than flip the pages back and forth, humility is 7. Trinadapi suni chena. And from that position of humility, reaching out to Krishna, recognizing I don't have the attraction for the chanting of Krishna's holy name, feeling oneself in a very humble state of mind, wishing to, striving to reach this intense and focused shelter, it's not happening. To amplify, there's this strong need for Krishna for Krishna's shelter and the need for His mercy to achieve that shelter. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is calling the Namashraya stage, where Krishna becomes our shelter. So a metaphor that's used several times in the Bhagavatam to describe the process of the transmigration of the soul, how it is that the soul leaves this body and goes to the next body. In case you're asked this question in the future, it's a common question people ask, how does it happen? Is there some interim period, or does it happen right away? The Bhagavatam gives the answer, or the metaphor, of an inchworm. So the inchworm has these front legs and the back legs and this long body in between. So here's the inchworm. He wants to go from this place over to that place. So he extends his body out this way, that way, and only when the inchworm touches the next place, then you can see immediately the body arches, the rear legs release, and then the rear legs move up to where the front legs are. And then it's the next one, look for the next place. Like that. So, using that metaphor, the subtle body, when the next body is determined, that's the front legs of the inchworm touching the next branch or leaf or twig, then once that is contacted, then the soul is transferred. And it happens, boom, boom, at once, instantly. The subtle body and the soul are transferred into the next gross body. So, Namashraya works similarly. What's going on is very different, but the principle is similar. We're looking for Krishna's shelter, but we're attached over here. Until this need for shelter, and to get that shelter, I require mercy. Can we change that word? Need for shelter? Mercy comes, and the sense of connectedness with shelter, Naam Ashraya, shelter in the holy name. Then, like the inchworm letting go of the previous twig or branch, our little comfort zone over here, we can take shelter of Krishna and let go. There has to be some little deaths, some little let goes. There's some go very easily and some are don't go so easily and some are really difficult, deeply ingrained. But the transition is the intensification of this sense of need for shelter and the need for mercy to go further in our spiritual life. It's a core part of Gaudiya Vaishnav teaching, the appeal for the mercy of the previous acharyas or our spiritual master or our founder acharya or sadhus. Core part of Lord Chaitanya's teaching and calling sincerely, strongly. It's not like Jai Jagannath, where is he? Went out. It was pointing out Gajendra had, you know, pretty strong reason. He had an alligator chomping on his leg. And Ajamila had a really good reason. Yamadutas had ropes around him. You know, but we might feel ourselves more comfortable. So do we have to wait for like calamity to strike before we feel some intensity? The answer is no. Hey, we can wait for some intensity, but we can strive sincerely, as the purpose of this retreat is, to take shelter of the holy name. And if we strive, the feelings of humility will grow because it's not happening. And we need mercy. And the more, not by doership or achieving modality, but wanting that shelter of Krishna, wanting a relationship with Krishna for spiritual purpose, spiritual reason. Because we generally want to restore our relationship with Krishna. That intensity will rise and mercy will come. It's reciprocal. Yayatam mam prapadyante. Tangs tataiva vajamyam. As we surrender unto Krishna, Krishna reciprocates. Infallibly, Krishna reciprocates. We turn our back on Krishna, Krishna allows us that illusion that he's ignoring us. He reciprocates with our regard for him, our disposition towards him. So it's critical, this Namashraya stage is critical. We can't just jump. It takes a series of willful efforts in that direction and following these very nice guidelines or teachings given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and unpacked a bit by Bhaktivinod Thakur. So this seed of love for Krishna comes in this stage. When we take shelter of Krishna, there's a sense of surrender or abandonment of false shelters or Atmanivedana, those that are familiar with the Sharanagati songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. That's the transition point from, he described in the beginning of the songs, as going along from birth and then childhood and young man and going along like, you know, somebody growing up in India at the time in a very aristocratic family and being very successful and then reaching the final stages of his life, realizing it's all going to slip through my fingers and I don't even know who I am and the goal of life, and at the fag end of my life, it's too difficult to achieve this. Krishna, I take shelter of you. And then he accounts his frailties and his insufficiencies and his deficiencies and his mistakes and his foolishness, and expressions of humility are abundant. And then towards progressively, I take shelter of you. So this Atmanivedana, or taking shelter, here the language is Namashraya, there's this sense of belonging. This is our real home. Like Jamuna Jivana shared when writing about what does it feel like being here in Gitanagari, I feel like I'm at home. So if we, when chanting, if we take shelter, we'll feel shelter. It's safety. It's home. It's where we belong in our relationship with Krishna. So Jiva Goswami says that this taking shelter of Krishna's holy name, it awards us with the sense of belonging to Krishna. Like, Krishna, I am yours. We belong to Krishna. This is our shelter. And there's the reverse component. Krishna, you're mine. Not like a piece of property you put in your pocket and walk down the street with. Not that kind of mine. But the only sense of possessiveness, which is very important to us in the material world, the possessiveness of my stuff or my bank balance, or my job, my family, my career, my house, my body, my stuff. That sense of possessiveness changes to a spiritual conception where there's only one thing that's mine, and that's my relationship with Krishna. All other things, of whatever value they are, it's in terms of that relationship with Krishna. And then it takes on richness. It takes on a whole other sense of value. But it's only in connection with Krishna and our relationship with Krishna. So I'll say it again. Jiva Goswami explains that this taking shelter gives one a sense of belonging. And with that sense of belonging, the sense of who we belong to and what belongs to us, I and mine, completely changes. It becomes not just theoretical, but practically experienced spiritualizing of our conceptions of life and our experience of life. And it's not circumstantial. It's not like when the wind blows in the right direction, it's okay. And if the wind blows in the wrong direction, I lose it. It's not created by or destroyed by anything circumstantial. When we actually have shelter, when will that day be mine? Kabe habi bolo seydin amar. When that sense of having taken shelter occurs, and in connection with the sense of belonging, is the next Shikshastakam verse, which we'll recite together now. It's an intensification of that sense of shelter, the sense of belonging to Krishna, and with that, the sense of fading of this previous significance of the false shelters. They just fade. We may still carry them out, but it's not our identity, our happiness. It's a service to Krishna, not just in theory, but that's everything to us is our shelter in Krishna. So everything becomes that we do that's important to us, it's in terms of our service to Krishna. It spiritualizes everything. It spiritualizes matter and our relationships and the world around us. You know, the challenges that we meet, it spiritualizes everything. Okay, so here we go. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam va jagadisha kamaye, mama janmani janmanishvare, bhavatad bhaktir ahaituki toye. Translation, Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor do I desire beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers. I only want your causeless devotional service. Birth after birth. So with shelter for a Vaishnava, it means service. So service, that's a haituki, or without hetu is means cause, without cause. A haituki bhakti, causeless devotional service. Or haituki apratiyata yayatma supraseedati. This is the mature stage of the Bhagavad Gita verse, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. Who knows that verse? Bless, you know the verse? Let's say it together. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma na sochati na kangsati samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. So the Brahma Bhuta stage and the happiness, prasanatma, the happiness of the soul is exhibited by an indifference to the material duality circumstances. Neither is there hankering for something we don't have, or lamenting for the loss of something that we no longer have, because of the happiness within. There's not looking for happiness outside. Then, seeing equally all living beings. This is offering respect, amanina, manadena. Respect because each living entity is Krishna's part and parcel. I mean, make it even easier and say each devotee that we know, they're worthy of our respect simply because they're Krishna's part and parcel, and there's something inside that has some attraction to Krishna, however they may be moving along their trajectory towards Krishna, they're a spirit soul. So there's a spiritual perspective or spiritual conception of the individual and respect. So samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. One labhate, when it attains that stage of Krishna's devotional service. So the prayer Shikshastakam 4 is praying for that causeless devotional service. It's not started by or generated by a material circumstance and checked by the absence of that same material circumstance. It's just springing out of the nature of the soul. And the soul's having now taken shelter in Krishna, simply wanting unconditional service without any thought of the material comforts or attractions. Na dhanam, wealth, na janam, followers, na sundrim, a attractive, depending on one's gender, male or female companion. Without attraction for those things, or not wishing for Krishna to please benedict me with one of those things. But service, causeless devotional service. This is the indication of taste. So that's number 9 on our list. Taste. If you ever ask yourself in the course of tomorrow's 64-round day, when will I taste the holy name? Well, when you're on this very advanced stage of Krishna consciousness. Until then, we're practicing. We can practice following these rules or measures of how we're progressing. But taste will come when anartha nivritti, or the unwanted things of the heart, are practically eradicated. Nishtha, when they're practically gone. And then comes ruchi. There's a an example of ruchi is the from Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Lord Chaitanya was taking darshan of Lord Jagannath, and it was a big crowd of people. So in that big crowd of people, one elderly Bengali lady climbed up Lord Chaitanya's body and stood on his shoulders and held onto the Garuda Stambha so she could see Lord Jagannath through the crowd. And Govinda was very upset. Get down, get down. This is Lord Chaitanya, get down, get down. And Lord Chaitanya said, no, no, no. If only I had such enthusiasm to have the darshan of the personality of Godhead as this woman, then I could become an advanced devotee. And then when she realized what she was doing, she was very embarrassed. She got down and... But her enthusiasm, her taste, her attraction was so strong, she forgot everything else. There's a little Vaishnava story like this. Once upon a time, there was a young lady who was passing through the forest, and in the middle of the forest there was a sage, and he was absorbed, or trying to get absorbed, in chanting of his mantras. And she was so enthusiastic, she passed right past the sage and didn't even bother to offer her respects to the sage. She was running to meet her lover. And the sage became very upset. What kind of undisciplined, unruly person is this? She didn't even bother to offer her respect to a sage, me. In fact, as she was running, she kicked me and didn't even apologize. Who does she think she is? So somehow he gathered himself together and tried to continue chanting his mantra, but his mind was too agitated. He couldn't concentrate on his mantra. And for hours this went on, and finally the girl came back along the same path, stopped before the Brahmana, offered her obeisances to the Brahmana, offered her apologies to the Brahmana, and he became very confused. You're so gentle and respectful, but why did you do this other? She explained, I was in a hurry to meet my lover, and the time had almost passed, and so my mind was so much filled with thoughts of him that I didn't even notice that you were there. I'm very sorry. Please forgive me. This is at the platform, the metaphor, or the little story, is that the platform where there's taste, the inconsistencies or the disturbances, the dualities of material nature don't usurp our energy or our mind or our thoughts or rule and dominate and make it so that we can't stay focused on intense shelter in Krishna's holy name. That's described. We're not there, but we can understand from the verse, that the Shikshastakam verse, that that's a stage of chanting. So maybe something that you can do when you're chanting nicely is take notice of where the sense of shelter is, or conversely, when you're not chanting nicely, where's my shelter? Maybe that's a word that doesn't mean so much for uncivilized people, or like Americans or something like that, where we don't have a sense of what shelter. We're just like, we're brazen Americans. We go wherever we want and do whatever we want. What do you mean by shelter? But a cultured person, there's a sense of shelter. And for a spiritual person, there's definitely a sense of shelter. So for a cultured person, it's, you know, values and, you know, the training of upholding standards of what cultured persons do, and you don't deviate from that. Like we find that in Mahabharata, where, you know, the heritage of the Pandavas, they're reminded regularly of our ancestry, and we're to live to uphold the good name of our line of kings. And our line of kings lives by these standards, and we can't deviate from those standards. But what shelter is that? It's very impermanent, very, very flimsy. There's not a person there, it's an ideal, or perhaps a virtue. And the goalposts keep changing. Like I remember when, a few years ago, there was a protest in Washington, D.C., where a number of protesters wanted to see that the place of origin of Krishna, our contemporary saint, was a Buddhist. Yeah, Dalai Lama. That his place of origin be restored, the Chinese should give it back, and Dalai Lama should go there and preside. So they're having a protest rally in Washington, D.C. So he was invited to come. So he came. And he stayed at some hotel or something. And they brought him a vegetarian meal, and he told them, take it back, I want veal. And they were shocked. It was in the New York Times, I distinctly remember. And he said, no, it's okay. I like this. But people know Buddhism means nonviolence, right? I mean, any high school kid knows that, what to speak of Dalai Lama. And he wanted not just meat, but he wanted veal. He's still a popular person. But, okay, if you're in Tibet, then maybe there isn't substantial vegetables. Maybe. But in Washington, D.C., there's plenty of vegetables. Anyway, standards keep moving in our place, in our time where there's no shelter. But when there is shelter, there's safety there. There's a, in this stage of the Shikshastakam verse, there's genuine taste for the holy name, for Krishna. We then become more aware of our tininess. Not that humility kind of like slides off the table. We become more aware of our tininess on our own, our incapability, a greater sense of dependence. But it's not a demeaning sense of dependence. It's a robust, strong sense of dependence. And in that sense of dependence, a increased revealing from Krishna's side of his sweetness, his mercy, our relationship with him, and so on. It's just, it gradually, incrementally unfolds. It's all very nice sounding, but, you know, we're way down here. So something that we can, that can help us come to the stage of taste is those steps that will help us take full shelter in the holy name. In his Madhurya Kandambini, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur wrote a book describing these nine stages of bhakti. And when he's describing the going from the stage of nishtha, which is like the stage of namashraya, to ruchi, or taste, here's how he describes. What can I say? I am unfortunate, for I am the lowest criminal. Though I have received the mercy of my spiritual master, I have not understood its proper value. Instead, I have been wandering everywhere, and this way I am wasting my very life. Keeping a precious jewel tied in the hem of my cloth, I have been searching out a cracked shell because it is glittering, a piece of glass. I have been searching for a spot of false happiness between the banks of the river of material encagements. I am not seriously practicing any anga or part of bhakti. For that, I manifest no energy. So deceitful I am. Sounds like intense self-deprecation. Where's the taste in all of that? So the point being, with taste, this nadanam, najanam, nasundrim, it doesn't have value. And yet my hankering, lifelong hankering has been for these valueless things. It's humility, and so the need for shelter has now intensified. And that intensifies the sense of taste. It almost sounds like, you know, reverse. Like I have no taste. And that's, you know, the sense. The humility of an advanced devotee becomes embarrassing. And it's very genuine. One time, Srila Prabhupada was asked by a reporter, "Swamiji, some people say that you're God. Is it true that you're God?" And Prabhupada's reply was, "No, no, no. I'm but a servant of God." And then a pause. I said, "Actually, I'm just trying to be a servant of God." So, in a childlike way, very innocent way, many expressions of humility were presented by Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta. On the occasion of Bhaktisiddhanta's Vyasa Puja one time, when there were reportedly like many initiations at the same time and people were reading their homages to him, and his expression was that all of you are giving me good instruction, what I should be like. Thank you for being my instructors. I will try to live up to all of what you say. Not, "Oh, that was cute." But he meant it. That was his internal mood. Or we read in so many. Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, when he's describing his own position, similarly, complete humility, and not just poetic, you know, good-sounding expressions of humility, but genuine expressions of humility. This is when there is real taste. The false ego is gone, and the real sense of humility, tininess, reaches proportions that are, as I said, embarrassing, but very genuine, very powerful. Keeping my eye on the clock, we'll go to the fifth verse of Shikshastakam. Chant that verse together, and we'll end with this. Ainanda tanuja kinkaram patitama vishame bhavam buddhau kripaya tava pada pankaja stita dhuli sadrisham vichintaya. Translation: O son of Maharaj Nanda Krishna, I am your eternal servitor. Yet, somehow or other, I have fallen into the ocean of birth and death. Please, pick me up from this ocean of death and place me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. Furtherance of this sense of belonging as part of Krishna. There's a very nice translation of this by Bhaktivinoda Thakur that you don't have a copy of, but it's here, so you have to listen. As you listen, he's paraphrasing this fifth verse. And as you listen, I request that you hear the word I, first person singular, think in terms of yourself, not Bhaktivinoda Thakur is thinking like this. But consider how this might be a nice prayer for tomorrow, and then the next day, and the next month. O Lord Krishna, O son of Maharaj Nanda, I am your eternal servant. But as a result of my previous activities, I have fallen into this terrible ocean of material existence. Lust, greed, anger, envy, and all the rest are my adversaries. They are my enemies. They wait in the waters of this ocean of material existence like big fish ready to swallow me up. waves of my hope, waves of my anxieties, toss me here and there, making my life miserable, lashing storms of bad association add further suffering. In this condition, therefore, I see you alone as my shelter. I now and then see some small bunches of weeds floating by, the weeds of karma, gyan, yoga, austerities, etc. I try to catch hold of them to help me as I am ravaged by the storms of my fate in this ocean of material existence. But has anyone ever crossed the mighty ocean of nescience by their strength? And trying to swim across this ocean, some have reached out to grab the weeds for support, but unfortunately everything, including the person himself, sinks like dead weights. Factually, I can see that there is no hope for shelter other than your unlimited mercy. The sturdy boat of your holy name is the only means of crossing over this dangerous ocean of material existence. Soberly, considering these facts, I beg for the invincible boat of the holy name from my guru, which he gave me by his causeless mercy. O Lord, you are the renowned protector of your devotee, those souls surrendered to your lotus feet. Therefore, please accept this homeless, destitute, this poverty-stricken person who has no wealth. Cleanse me of my faults and consider me a particle of dust at your lotus feet. So, beautiful. Within the process of bhakti, I'll say it twice, but in different ways, same thing twice. In the process of bhakti, there's a metaphor of the creeper that starts with a seed, bhakti lata bij. And from that seed, when properly cultivated, it makes a little sprout. Boop. And then two little leaves unfurl as the sprout grows, and it gives further metaphor, a smooth side on the top and a rough side underneath the leaf, and then more leaves, and it continues to grow. It describes bhakti in that way. And then eventually, in the mature stage, there's flowers, manjaris, if it's a tulsi, and then fruits or seeds, so it makes more of the same. So, the bhakti process has different stages, as outlined by Rupa Goswami. The important thing to understand about the bhakti creeper is that, unlike something material, when the previous stage is passed, the next stage does not manifest what the previous stage has. Like, let's say, a little baby's body. Once the baby grows, the little boy or girl's body. And then the little boy or girl's body becomes changed, and it's now another body, a youthful body, and then a young adult body, and so on. The previous stage is gone, is the point. And the next stage is manifest. But repeatedly our acharyas explain that in bhakti, it's not that something is lost and something else replaces it, but the same thing continues just in another stage. Something like with rasas, shanta, dasha, sakya, vatsalya, madhurya, whatever is contained in the subsequent rasa is there from the previous rasa plus another element, and so on. You follow the point I'm making? So also in this unfolding of chanting, or even in like this rendering of the verse that Bhaktivinoda Thakur translated, there's elements of humility, there's elements of submission, there's elements of shelter, there's elements of calling out helplessly for the Lord. There's a sense of attaining the Lord's shelter. And the request very intensely to be considered or placed as a dhuli, a little particle, a little fragment, a dust particle upon the Lord's lotus feet. Like, you're my only shelter. So in a state of humility, let me be there as a particle of dust at your lotus feet. It's a maturing of what was previously expressed. Saying the same thing another way, or another way of saying the same thing is what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says about the Shraddha to Prema and each of the stages. Each of them is but a stage of faith. So the first stage is faith, and the last stage is faith, and everything in between is faith. It's just given different names according to the stage of evolution, of faith. So it's very important, very, very important that we nurture our faith and we don't expose ourselves to things that are going to harm our faith. Say it positively. That faith should be nurtured. It should be wisely, thoughtfully, with our eyes open, not blind faith, but very thoughtfully, carefully nurtured. And as devotees, our service unto others is to similarly help nurture faith. Not blindly, sentimentally, but in a proper way, according to Guru Sadhu and Shastra, nurture faith. We should select association that will nurture our faith. I'll give two other renderings of this. Here's Dravida's rendering of this fifth Shikshastakam verse. You know how he does. It's poeticized. You know the one? Do you know it by heart? Yeah? Go ahead. You can't remember now? I panicked you? Your servant for eternity. I lost my true identity and fell into this horrid sea of birth and death, O Lord. O Nanda's son, please hear my plea. By your sweet grace, consider me a speck of dust upon your lotus feet forevermore. And here is Mahanidhi Swami, a third rendering. Very beautiful, very inspiring. I'll make a point to read these two of these tomorrow morning for the kickoff of the 64 round day. O son of Nanda Krishna, O king of the country of love, I appeal for your affection. I am your servant. I feel deep within myself that I have some connection with you. I am subordinate to you. But somehow, I am now in an adverse circumstance. There are so many enemies within me trying to take me away from you. Therefore, I cannot give my full attention to you and your name. At the same time, I feel from the deepest place in my heart that you are my master You are all and everything to me. My heart will never be satisfied without your companionship. So I appeal to you. I am under unfavorable circumstances. I am suffering. And without your grace, I do not find any relief from my present imprisoned condition. And in this way, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, by prayer and by meditation upon these prayers, one can be carried by Lord Chaitanya to advanced stages of Krishna consciousness through the medium of chanting Krishna's holy name, where there's genuine shelter. And even when there's genuine shelter, the sense of humility is profound. It gives impetus not to throw in the towel. It gives impetus to call more sincerely, more earnestly, more intently for the Lord's mercy. And it's not with an alligator on your leg or the yamadutas with ropes around your subtle body. It's just recognizing this is our circumstance by spiritual cultivation, by proper following of the process of sadhana bhakti with proper guidance. So, some fundamental principles of advancing further along the path of Krishna consciousness by taking up the process of chanting with the help of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Shikshastakam and Bhaktivinoda Thakur's wonderful teachings about them. So, our magic schedule says next we have a meditation, right? And then some writing and then some sharing. Okay.
We'll do one more meditation, the last meditation for this japa retreat. We did this wonderful meditation last year, actually, so some of you are familiar with it. And a lot of you like it, I know. So we're repeating it again. many devotees had very wonderful experience with this. And I hope that those who didn't, or those who were not present last time, have a wonderful experience this time. So normally we don't do so many meditations, but I wanted to read something from Nectar of Devotion about meditation. It's from chapter 10, which is Techniques of Hearing and Remembering. To meditate means to engage the mind in thinking of the form of the Lord, the qualities of the Lord, the activities of the Lord, and the service of the Lord. Meditation does not mean anything impersonal or void. According to Vedic literature, meditation is always on the form of Vishnu. In the Narasimha Purana, there is a statement about meditation on the form of the Lord. It is said there, meditation, focusing on the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has been accepted as transcendental and beyond the experience of material pain and pleasure. By such meditation, even one who is grossly miscreant can be delivered from the sinful reactions of his life. So it's very much bona fide. So I would like to begin the meditation now. I'd like to request you, like in the previous meditations, to please sit in your comfortable position. And you may close your eyes and focus on your breath. take a few deep breaths. And when you're ready, gradually turn your attention to your heart. In your heart, visualize the form of the Lord that attracts you the most, your worshipable Lord. It could be your personal deities that you worship, could be some other deity, could be a picture. The form of the Lord that attracts you the most. So look at the form of the Lord. Look at His beautiful smile, His reddish lips, His curly black hair, His beautiful lotus eyes. He's looking at you with so much love and compassion for you. Lord Krishna is always in your heart. He knows your thoughts, your worries, anxieties, all your desires. And He also knows your deepest longing for Him. Is always there for you. Now imagine that your most worshipable Lord steps out of your heart and sits in front of you. He's sitting in front of you with a lot of eagerness. And He wants to hear your chanting, your call for Him. You may begin to chant at your own pace. Please chant the name of Krishna to Krishna. Krishna is listening. Now with your eyes still closed, just sit for a minute in the presence of the Lord in your heart and stay in gratitude. Please repeat after me. My dear Lord, please accept me. Please accept me. Do not ever leave me. Please accept me. Now you may invite the Lord to come back into your heart. Krishna is always there in your heart, and he's always listening to your chanting. He's always ever eager to hear your heartfelt calling for Him. Please bow down your head in gratitude and you can slowly open your eyes. I'd like you all to take a few minutes now to just journal your experience and write your experience, and then we'll request a few people to share. How many people need more time? Okay. Would someone like to share their experience? Everyone is very shy.
Hare Krishna. I saw Radha Damodar as if they were still on a bus, in the sense that I didn't come to see them. They came to see me. They picked me up in the middle of nowhere. I wasn't expecting this. But here I am, captured. No, they are the deities for the homeless.
Anyone else?
When she was going through the meditation, I was thinking of all the times that I've just let these reptilian thoughts get in the way of the soul's perception of them, and how really easy it is to perceive that the Lord is in our heart, and then the natural position is to take advantage of this chanting, because the soul can perceive that, but the mind gives so many excuses. And it was a little bit disheartening to go through, and when you do that, sometimes things flash before you, and always one of the 10 offenses comes up that I see in so many ways that I how I deviated into allowing my mind to think that this may be something propagated out of my imagination or something that but you go back to the heart, and it's so easy to see, and it was like actually seeing the Lord come out of my heart and sit there and being in His presence, and not that I'm wanting to be on that platform, but yet at the same time, if I don't put myself at that platform to see that it's actually a real process, and that I don't want those impediments in there anymore, that it's time to remove those impediments and understand that I can do that by being humble and accepting the mercy of the Lord. So that's basically it. It was a pretty touching, though, to go through that.
Thank you.
I felt that this way of chanting the holy name is very personal, and it's sort of and the humble prayer of the please accept me helps me to take shelter with feeling of honest self-acceptance and self-compassion for myself.
Any Matajis?
Thank you for the taking us through this meditation. I was trying to meditate on the form of Radha Damodar, and the form of the Lord was very clear in my mind's eye. like how she was talking about his lips and his lotus eyes and all that. But when it came to chanting, just like how it's there on the chart, the intense and focus, shelter taking in the holy name, I was trying to do that, but I couldn't do it. And then just like Maharaj said, the need to take shelter and the calling out for mercy, and so it's work in progress. Thank you.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj and Mataji, for this class. For the first time, I was able to do chanting without my mind really wandering, and a lot of peace and tranquility. But I do not know, maybe it's over here, because it's, as Guruji said, we are here because of the association. But when I go back home, this is when the reality want to test myself. If this would really, continue, I'll be able to continue with the same peace and tranquility. And for the first time, my mind was just on the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Bol.
I'd like to now move to our next little session. We're trying to give you a lot of tools and knowledge and all that to prepare you for the 64 rounds. Wonderful philosophy, nice prayers and meditations and so on. So that if one thing doesn't work, another thing will hopefully work tomorrow when you hit those valleys during your 64 rounds day. So what we would like you to do now is we've heard many prayers, many classes, and so on. I'd like you to compose a prayer in your own words to the holy name. And you can use this prayer tomorrow during your chanting. And you can also compose another prayer to your mind. When it's really giving you a hard time, you can use this prayer to calm your mind tomorrow. So we'll take maybe about 15 minutes. You can spend some time writing these prayers. They're very, very powerful. Put your heart in it. They'll become very useful tools tomorrow. like to request a few devotees to share if they would like to. It's very inspiring for others to hear each other's prayers. Do you all need more time? Okay, one more minute. Thirty seconds more. Would someone like to share?
My dear Nimai Nitai, all along I was thinking I need to do something, I need to achieve something, like to gain your mercy, to gain your attention, to gain your association. But the fact is you are already there with me and your mercy is very abundant to me. But unfortunately, due to my covering or misconceptions, I was asleep to your mercy. But still you are with me. So here I am trying to chant your holy name, which can help me be attentive to you by giving me relief from the ignorance or the covering. And if you desire so, may I have some strength to utter your holy name attentively even once. Thank you very much, Guru Maharaj and Krishna.
Anyone else?
Prayer to the mind or prayer to the holy name? Either one?
Whatever you like.
Prayer to the mind, I had a lot to say. Where do I start with you? I accept that you're creation. I accept that you are a creation of my own rebellion towards God. But I have these antagonistic feelings towards you. Then I start singing this old song, "Please release me, let me go to Krishna. Please stand back just once let the soul call out to Krishna with pure feelings of love and wishing to serve, just once." My Guru Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada has said that all nonsense is gone just by that. Once. Please give me a break. No anxieties. No worries. No trying to be perfect. No image to be put up. No lamentation. Just once, my dear mind, stop. I'll stop.
Thank you.
my dear Lord Krishna, thank you so much for showing that I have turned my attention away from you. Yet you are eagerly waiting with more love and just waiting for me to turn my attention back to you. But I am still not able to call out your holy names with that same intensity and feeling and love that you have for me. Please forgive my mechanical chanting and inattentive hearing. Please bless me with a drop of your love for me, and with that ocean, let me try to reciprocate your love. And praise to the mind. My dear mind, please surrender at Krishna's lotus feet and help me dedicate myself completely and fully to Krishna's service in this life, and let me use my full lifetime in his service. Please take complete satisfaction, happiness and bliss in his service. He is the only worshipable Lord. Kindly stop troubling me and help me to chant and hear attentively with pure love and devotion. I want to chant and hear every day like I did when I was in the Mayapur Navadvip Parikrama.
Thank you. Oh my dear Lord Krishna, please bless me so that I can chant your holy name without offenses. O all attractive, all pleasing Lord, O energy of the Lord, please help me to chant without offenses. Please help me to have attraction and taste for your holy names. Please keep me alert and remove sleepiness. Pray to the mind. O mind, please don't disturb me when I chant the Lord's holy name. Please focus on the divine couple and hear the song vibration of the holy name.
Anyone on the Mataji's side? Ganeshita Mataji.
My dear Lord Krishna, please allow me to submerge myself in the depths of your holy name, so that I may come to realize the full significance of being your servant. Thank you.
Any of our youth here?
We have a half hour left, 34 minutes left. That's, at least on our schedule, is time for questions and discussion. So, anybody would like to bring up a question or have some topic about chanting discussed? Yes.
Well, Hare Krishna Maharaj, we were talking about some of the fears that come up as we go deeper in either our chanting, our relationship with Krishna. So I'm noticing that just as it's said in the Bhagavad Gita, it's like you know, happiness in the mode of passion is like poison first and then nectar. So I'm realizing sometimes I'll have some experiences that it's like if you're accustomed to darkness and then light comes and you're not ready for it, you're used to the darkness. So someone may be opposed to the light. So I've had a few experiences like that. And I'm not sure, you know, I feel like maybe just it's a very gradual process. But I don't know really what to make of that, you know.
Let me say back what I thought I heard. First was I spoke something about fears. All that I recall speaking about fears was in one of these prayers was an expression, please remove my fears. Okay. Then second thing is happiness in the mode of goodness, not passion. Happiness in the mode of goodness in the beginning appears to be like poison and later turns to be nectar. But the main part of your question is, as you're going along in your Krishna consciousness, sometimes something arises that looks fearful, or you get a sense of fear from that, whatever that something experience is, and you want to know how to process that or how to overcome fear when that happens?
Maybe a realization or something comes that I don't feel that I'm really ready for or something. And there's that, like, that was a little...
Pulling back.
Yeah, I'm not ready to dive into the depth of some things when they come, so...
On a personal note, I'm surprised to hear that from you because you're an adventuresome spirit. You're a risk-taking individual. By your character. And I'm surprised to hear that, like, Krishna discloses something or something happens that I'm not ready for yet. That's just a comment on your... When you place yourself in Krishna's care or in his shelter, a couple of things. One is he reciprocates. So whatever it is that's coming falls under the category of Krishna's reciprocation. So that's nice. Whatever it is, it's nice because it's the essence is it's Krishna's reciprocation. However, that something that Krishna reciprocates with may not be what we were expecting was, you know, in our fruitive calculation and in our materially tainted mind, what we were expecting would be Krishna's reciprocation. And so the sense of fear has to do with losing something that's important in the material sphere. And so we're afraid. We're afraid of losing our life, or afraid of losing a limb, or afraid of losing our money, or afraid of losing something that we hold dear in the material world. So that's the explanation of where the fear is coming from. Because it's, you know, light will displace, as you described, will displace darkness. And we kind of are habituated to our darkness and maybe even like it. Although we're moving toward the light by moving towards Krishna. So, as you described, you know, that the having been in darkness for so long, seeing some light and you're squinting because it's like it's a lot of light at once. In short, your eyes will adjust. There's a natural process for that. And once you become adjusted to the light, you know, it's going to be difficult to go back to darkness again. Because in light you can see things. So that's, you know, recognizing it's actually the fruit of what you want. Second is nature will make its own adjustment. Third thing is knowledge. The knowledge is that suffering comes out of ignorance. And if light or knowledge displaces ignorance, which is suffering, that's good. So, you know, in other words, by understanding what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning it may seem like poison, that's okay. If I know, in fact, it's medicine, it's good. The classic example is for a person who has jaundice, the cure is rock candy. But for the person who has rock candy, it tastes bitter. But the person who has jaundice taking rock candy knows it's actually sweet, although it tastes very bitter. It's not bitter, it's very sweet. And I just continue taking the rock candy and the sweetness flavor will prevail instead of the bitter. The bitterness is just because of the disease itself which I'm trying to cure. So that message boils down to continue taking the medicine. But you also have to gauge, you know, what your capacity is. You don't want to take two steps forward and three steps back. But if you're fortified with knowledge, then you can continue taking medicine that, or seeing light that opens your eyes, and thank Krishna for that. Om Ajnana Timarandasya. You know that prayer. Chakshura Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So it's... the squinting of your eyes or the bitterness of the rock candy or whatever, you know, the experience of something that Krishna discloses that, whoa, I wasn't ready for that one. It's all part of becoming well again. Or spiritually properly situated. Anything else?
Guru Maharaj, how to apply the mercy that I receive and use it in Krishna's service rather than enjoying it?
How to apply which in Krishna service?
The mercy that I receive.
How to apply it?
Apply it in Krishna service rather than enjoying it.
The first most important step is maintaining humility. Because if you don't maintain humility, the opposite will happen. One will become proud. So to make sure that you use some mercy in Krishna's service, maintain humility. And then, you know, whether it's seeming fortune or misfortune, you just, in a reflective way, you consider what is the best way that this should be used. And then you consider the examples of in Srila Prabhupada's life or teachings that you've heard, and how might this something be used in Krishna's service. And so first is humility, then gratitude, then contemplation of practicality, of application. There's no rush. Something that comes can take some time, it's properly utilized. Maybe it's some honor, maybe it's some service, maybe it's some wealth, maybe it's whatever, a realization, something. How is this best utilized in Krishna's service? And our capacity may be less than what it takes presently to use that something in Krishna's service. But if we're contemplating how to best use it in Krishna's service, our capacity may increase. Then we can consult with those that are more experienced than us, how is this best utilized in Krishna's service? Okay, anything else? Yes?
Thank you very much, Maharaj and Mataji, for the wonderful class and meditations. My question is about, I'm facing a difficulty on simultaneously hearing the sound vibrations of the holy name along with calling out the Lord. I can do either one of them, like not both simultaneously. For me, it's easy to focus on the sound vibrations, but the other aspect doesn't come in then, calling out for the Lord. So how do I bring in both the things?
How do you bring in chanting and, in essence, a mood of prayer? That's what you're saying? It's the short answer is from your heart, that the mood of prayer, the particular words are less important than the mood. The words convey a mood. So the mood is more important. So perhaps what you can do is become familiar with the prayer and then just take a little snippet, a little capsule, phrase that says the whole prayer from your heart without all the words. Or two words or three words. So rather than, it can be distracting. I'm reciting the prayer, I'm reciting the holy name, got to give my attention to the holy name, but I have to keep the words of the prayer in your schizophrenic or something. So it's a mood. So the words become like symbols of something. The symbols can be expanded. I mean, like these translations of Shikshastakam number 5 that I read out loud. You don't have a copy of. Besides the translation, the standard translation, I read 3 others. There's something embedded within them may stand out for you or for me or someone. And those are the things that... So now we'll go back. You're chanting and there's something within that Shikshastakam number 5 that inspires you. So it inspires your chanting. You're taking shelter of Krishna's holy name exclusively, in a mood of dependence, in a mood of, I have no other shelter, and so forth. So it impels or enhances the chanting. It doesn't, like, you have to be of two minds. So if you become, you can recite the prayer aloud or silently before chanting, and if you and do that on a regular basis, it becomes part of the mood of your chanting. Something like that. Where's the microphone? Okay.
The last few... So there were 2 statements that were made in the last few sessions. One was, if we are not progressing because of our material conditioning, we are regressing in our spiritual life.
Well, simpler. We're either progressing or regressing. There's not a question of standing still.
Right. And then the other statement was made by Mataji. She said that so there's this hills and valleys, but ultimately the essence is our relationship with Krishna.
But ultimately?
It's the essence is relationship with Krishna.
Yeah, yes. How do those two fit together?
Yeah.
Sure. I'm staying up at the Institute House. So to get from the Institute House, from here to the Institute House, I may walk along a flat part, and then I may walk along a hilly part, and then go down a little slope of a hilly part to get to the Institute House. So the essence is reaching the goal, whether I'm flat, up or down. And all three of those cases, I'm progressing towards the goal. Tomorrow, during 64 round day, there may be some high points, there may be some low points. But what's important is not whether it's a high point or a low point at any particular time. It's that you're seeking a relationship with Krishna, particularly in the form of His holy name. Separate from that, so that's the hills and the valleys part. Separate from that is complacency. That's like, you know, standing still. That's not progressing. It's complacency. So you're here at the Japa retreat to progress. So whether it's the hill or the valley, you're progressing. You're striving for that relationship with Krishna to strengthen it and deepen it and experience the shelter of Krishna's holy name. That's progressing, whether it's a hill or a valley, a high experience or a low experience. The regressing or the standing still is not even making an effort. Okay? Distinction is clear?
I have a question just regarding these stages of bhakti. My understanding is that there's overlap and you can go like between the stages before yes. it gets fixed.
Yes.
And so I was just thinking like the whole topic of connected chanting or for that matter even like connected sadhana, that when we're in that, when we're doing our sadhana with that connection, very quickly there's so much absorption and so many realizations and security and confidence that come with it. But yet because there's not that depth or maturity in the realization, like one can fall back. And you were speaking also yesterday about how the moment the connection slackens, all the past condition tendencies can come back. I'm just wanting to hear a little bit more on that topic of how to...
Yeah, okay, another way of, it's just another way of saying the same thing is to hear more on the topic. Prabhupada explained this Brahma-Bhuta Prasanatma nasochati nakangsati. That verse, mad bhaktim labhate param, can be intermittent, like stop, start, or submission, slackening and submission. Oh, it hurts. Submission. Ah, I feel relief. Slacking and submission. Oh, it hurts. Submission. So, off and on. So one can be on the Brahma-Bhuta or Brahman happiness platform and then slacken from that. So, yes, realization may not endure. We can, as you expressed, fall back. It's a measure of our regard for Krishna, and our regard for Krishna also varies, and the reciprocation from Krishna corresponds with our regard for Krishna. So the fallback perhaps is mechanical chanting, from attentive chanting, and calling out sincerely to Krishna, chanting, or any other form of devotional expression. Our receiver is on. there's poor reception, our receiver is off. The signal from Krishna is the same, just like, you know, how receptive are we? And Krishna, so it varies according to our regard for Krishna, which in an immature stage is unsteady. In a mature stage becomes steady. In a very advanced stage is fixed. So it's a symptom of unsteady bhakti, what you described. You have a further question?
Like even from the stage of bhava, like we read about how there is this trace of like some...
That's extraordinary. That's not... for us, that's totally theoretical.
Right. So I guess I'm just thinking like at our stage... maybe I'm not able to express my question clearly.
Well, there's until one reaches the nishtha stage, there's sufficient abundance of anartas that unsteady bhakti prevails. Anishtita bhakti prevails. Mm-hmm. And so even in anishtita bhakti, there may be the parting of the clouds and then it's cloudy again. Mm-hmm. Because the clouds metaphor is used for the anartas. The clouds may part. And then again, it's cloudy again. It's unsteady. It's just a symptom of anishtita bhakti. Next.
Maharaj, there was a sentence that I had heard in your previous section about... humility, you were mentioning that real humility does not depend on circumstances. So, right. I wanted to know more about this because I was thinking that as I'm hearing about the process of devotional service and I'm trying to apply it in my day-to-day activities, I'm getting more and more convinced about the reality in the teachings and the purity in those who are teaching.
Good.
And it's making me, you know, realize what is my position. But then I thought that maybe these are all circumstantial, so it's not really...
But maybe what?
They're all circumstantial because situations come up and then...
Circumstances come up and there goes humility. That's what your point is, right? Yeah. So it's great. There's theoretical, and as you're having a clearer understanding of the theoretical, it's inspiring you to apply it, so you're getting some further realization of what it means to have humility that's not circumstantial. But while, again, this is an unsteady bhakti description, it's not what you're doing is material, it's just not yet mature. It's the stage of growing in maturity of bhakti, where it's not circumstantial anymore, in a mature stage. It's fixed. And the unsteady condition of humility will be influenced by circumstances in an unsteady or anishtita bhakti stage, depending upon the anartas in which anartas get, you know, zapped or perked or, you know, kicked. And then there's an ouch, and so, you know, you go into the material energy, you know, paradigm again, losing humility. And then realizing that you lose humility, and then whoops, and getting back to clarifying your position and cultivating again. So it's not just knowledge. Knowledge alone isn't going to do it. It's application in devotion unto Krishna that knowledge becomes realized, and the state of realization is not yet matured. So anishtita bhakti. You're following the right process. You are advancing in Krishna consciousness. I'm verifying, validating. You're advancing a little, slowly in Krishna consciousness. That's good. Continue. And may that anishtita bhakti come to the stage of nishtha, where it's not circumstantial. Any circumstance, humility will prevail. And the right kind of humility, not just, you know, not the turn the other cheek kind of humility, you know what I mean by that? But I am the servant of Krishna humility. That's my position. Nothing can change me from that position. No circumstance is going to take that away or cover it. I may recognize, whoa, I'm being, you know, feeling these other feelings, but I'm not leaving this position of trying to serve Krishna favorably. Okay? Nilesh, right here, in front of you.
Maharaj, you mentioned about the incident of those barking dogs, and you said that you neglected by taking shelter of the instruction. My question is, how do I understand that? Am I imitating, or am I really there to, you know, take that step?
Well, that's like, you know, how do I know if I'm sincere or not? And Prabhupada's answer is, everybody knows what sincerity is. Or another way of answering your question is, let's just assume that there's a mix. That's the safest. It's not completely imitation, and it's not completely realized in the beginning. It's a mix. So the measure that should be checked is this being done in a mood of service, or is it or not? And to what degree is the mood of service there, and to what degree is just like this other question, is circumstance disrupting it? And it's just like, it's gone. Okay, we have 3 minutes, and Dinishta has a question. Oh, let's help you with that one. I like that one. What's the problem?
My problem, I don't know, maybe I'm thinking of it the wrong way. If you would be so kind and clarify. Please accept me. It seems like I don't believe that Krishna has accepted me, and that's therefore I'm begging him to accept me. The way I feel about it is that he has accepted me. He's my eternal friend.
Okay.
I feel like...
Okay. I'll say it even stronger. And that is Bhaktisiddhanta's phrase, the transcendental autocrat is forever inviting the fallen conditioned soul to come and join with him again in his loving, serving mood, right? So what's the question of Krishna accepting? Because he's sent an invitation. He's already accepting. So the question of that expression is not from Krishna's side. Pause. It's from our side. We'll take that phrase and expand it. My dear Lord Krishna, I have an eternal relationship with you. But from my side, I turned my back on you and I walked away. And you were pleading with me, please stay here with me and enjoy happy life. And I said, no, I'm leaving you. And for countless millions of lifetimes, stubbornly and foolishly, I've maintained that disposition. And now I'm suffering terribly the consequences of that misuse of free will. I don't deserve your kindness. But nonetheless, I'm asking you, you're my only shelter. Please again accept me in your service. It's not like, oh, just do a U-turn and go back to Krishna and Hari Bol. Because from Krishna's side, it could be that easy. But from our side, my rebellious spirit is so strong. My mountain of reactions and rebellious spirit is so strong, so hard. Despite my disqualification. So it's an expression of humility from our side. Please engage me in your service. So a short version is, Krishna, please accept me. Here's a real simple one. You know that one, right? Your grandmother. Okay. And what does grandmother do? Yeah. So that's what Krishna, please accept me is all about. It's this one. I understand what you're saying. So, you know, from your side, just, you know, in spiritual master-disciple relationship, it's, we've got an echo in this thing. It's that acceptance is already there. Okay. Now, Guru Maharaj, can you put in a good word for Krishna too? Because I know that you accept me, but what about, you know, and you've given me the holy name, but, you know, my mind is not as fixed on the holy name as it is in knowing that you've accepted me. So I need some extra mercy here. Even knowing that Krishna is inviting you to come back, I need some extra mercy. While chanting, it's a mood while calling Krishna's name. Yeah, but it's opening our heart to Krishna's descending mercy. That's what it means. No, it's opening of your heart, that's all. Think of the example I just gave you, and it may help. Grandmother loves the grandchild. There's no need to validate grandmother loves the child. Still, the child goes like that. And the grandmother picks up the child and validates. It's already there. It's given. Still. In our stage, because of our prolonged, countless lifetimes of deviation from our rightful position in our relationship with Krishna, please allow me to return to that eternal position in loving service to you. So all of that is capsulized in this other phrase. If that phrase doesn't resonate with you, as it does with me, then you can say, you know, please engage me in your service. Or the teaching of Shikshastakam number 5, please place me as a little speck at the dust, as a particle of dust at your lotus feet, eternally engaged in your service. You feel that you're already a particle of dust at Krishna's lotus feet? No. So you can pray like that. And I'll continue to pray, Krishna, please accept me, because that resonates very well with me. I don't feel dust in Krishna's lotus feet. I just accept me in your service. Okay? It's saying the same thing in different language. The mood is that one. Okay, it's time for kirtan.